Hello, my name is Brian Ovechelsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we're joined by Mark Garofoli, Clinical Assistant Professor and Director of Experiential Learning at West Virginia University School of Pharmacy. Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today, Mark.
Absolute pleasure to be here, Brian, of course, as always, and always love reading or listening to what Drug Topics is up to. So obviously, it's fun to be a part of it as well, too.
Awesome. Very much appreciate that. So today we're going to be discussing recent developments stemming from the FDA, specifically the administration's commissioner, Marty Makary, and his recent comments stating that everything should be over the counter in regard to prescription drugs in the U.S. So Mark, to start, the FDA commissioner argues that everything should be over the counter unless it's proven unsafe or addictive. Obviously, it's a big overarching, big umbrella claim, if you will. Do you agree with this default to OTC access, or would it place too much of a medical responsibility onto patients?
Oh, you gotta love yes or no questions when there's so much in the background there. I wish I can go on a mountaintop and decry something and then have so many people listening actively or not, but there's a lot going on with the statement so short, so succinct, and so powerful. The question is, where does the action actually go? I will give you this short answer, don't worry. But when you think about it, it dives deeper. This headline, this statement hopefully makes a lot of people stop and think, how do we organize our healthcare system overall and access to medications? This idea of, everything's OTC unless, and somehow that gets lost in the shuffle is the unless. Like you said, unless it's unsafe. I have significant questions with that terminology. I'm sure other pharmacists do as well, too, unless it's unsafe. If it's unsafe, why would it even be a prescription product out of the gate there? In an objective pharmacological sense, hard to agree with that concept. To a point, wouldn't it be OTC, but then would it still be prescription even? The other side, of course, if something could be misused, abused, diverted, you name it, there's obviously concerns with that. We have other OTCs currently where that comes into play, but that doesn't lay the land for the future either, though. But it really begs that question of what's our categories? How do we go about the organization and regulation and eventually enforcement of medications in our country or substances overall? It's easy to agree with the, that part of it, just objectively speaking. The other thing that was mentioned too in his statement was that, if something requires monitoring. And I actually said this, that statement of rewording it a little bit to say, if something requires monitoring, it's almost like you could whittle it down to that's the definition of a prescription medication. So it's a lot of pomp and stance going on there. That mountain I talked about, smoke from the mountain of if something's unsafe, where should it be anyway? If something requires monitoring or could be abused, it's almost like we're talking about the core definition of prescription medications, if not controlled substances, of course. Didn't give the yes or no for you there, but there's dissecting it. There's different parts to consider there. And it's really important to do that, of course.
Awesome. No, yeah, that was perfect. Obviously, so many different things to consider and where this touches every facet of healthcare. But I like when you talked about the unsafe, and it made me think about like cannabis and how that's the federal government sees that as a Schedule I drug, and then other places it's like way on the opposite end of the spectrum. So I think similar issues, like if this would really get put forward, would arise. So definitely a lot of things to consider. So want to talk about price real quick. OTC status can lower cash prices through competition. It often adds insurance coverage. So obviously it's a big kind of like nail in that and divergence in insurance coverage. How should pharmacists advise patients who might see a $10 copay turn into a $30 out-of-pocket cost amid the current push for prescription drugs to move to OTC?
That component doesn't make our lives easier as pharmacists, of course, because it's more information to go over that gets very convoluted. When someone's copay is $13.57, seriously, how do we explain that? There's components that go into it, and then in a larger picture, like you're saying, coverage for prescription products, if something's not a prescription, then how does it get covered in a prescription drug plan? We have precedent for that, even in quite volatile topics, naloxone, opioid mu antagonists, the concept of some of the naloxone products being OTC. There was certainly concern across the board in healthcare for, will there be coverage then if it's available over the counter? It comes down to the individual insurance plan, not even the company as a whole, but the plans, the multiple plans for each company to make those formulary decisions. It But at the same time, it's not like they're not able to make that decision when it's a prescription product either, hence formularies. So it just opens up another door of ambiguity. At the same time, though, with potential OTC to prescription, it does enable, you think about all the efforts for collaborative practice or prescribing for pharmacists. We see many examples of that anymore. If something's OTC, it's not that, but it's almost inherent to that. So access, part of it can increase because if it's OTC, gas stations got it, grocery stores got it. What opens up that part, but access also includes cost to the core of your question. And that's going to differ product to product. And that's going to be very confusing for patients and, quite frankly, healthcare professionals alike.
Awesome. Yeah. Obviously, healthcare doesn't really need more ambiguity. They're saying that every product should be OTC, then you're like gas stations and retail grocery stores becoming pharmacies. Obviously, it looks jumbled and it's strange, but obviously, like there are the benefits there. Moving along to like specific actual like drugs that are moving or have moved or could move in the future, proponents suggest moving medications like albuterol and GLP-1s to OTC status. Given their narrow therapeutic windows, is the risk of toxicity or misuse for drugs like these too high for patients to manage without clinical supervision? Obviously, if they're still OTC, pharmacists would have part of a role, but it would be much different compared with these drugs being prescriptions. So what are your thoughts on those?
Oh, I think you're trying to get me tachycardic here. You know, that word that I was using earlier that we talked about, access, it's incredibly important for people, right? Can there be too much access? Perhaps. That balance of safety and efficacy is incredibly important. A lot of folks, even some pharmacists have said, well, what if some of these grandfathered products from decades past, I'll say, you know, what if they came out today? Would they be OTC? It's a kind of a legit question. Again, it provokes thought into how we organize things in our healthcare system across the planet too, of course. But the OTC idea is that people perceive that as safer because they don't have to go through the hoops to get to it. All medication has its baggage, though. It's just inherent. Even current over-the-counter medications come with baggage, safety concerns, interactions, side effects, you name it. That's inherent along the way. But there's a delicate balance between the access and those safety parameters along the way. There's just those times in the core of any healthcare system where, you know, requiring, mandating, or making it an innately part of the system to have a healthcare professional alongside a patient, a customer in certain stores, not even our pharmacies, is for the benefit of that person. It's almost like we're talking about a parenting concept here. I want you to have access, but I don't want negative things to potentially happen. Will it happen for everyone? No, but it could. And that balance is very delicate. There's been even examples, I believe, from other countries, but we've considered it even our country. Should we add a different level? Simple words like behind the counter, where you would eliminate the access in various stores, dollar whatever stores, gas stations, grocery stores, like we mentioned earlier, and limit to a pharmacy where they would be required to talk with someone. We got to watch ourselves with that, though. Us healthcare professionals, one of the last times I was a patient in pain, mind you, I when I went to the pharmacy, I needed you to sign here. You think you made me tachycardic 3 minutes ago. Good golly. When the Spider-Man thing, our oldest son would love this one. Power, responsibility comes into play as well, too. We've got to practice at the top of our license to even consider those types of things as well. And that's really where it hits the patient care in the big picture.
Awesome. Yeah, perfectly said. That's also a great segue into the next question. Talking about what other countries are doing with it, one thing that we cover a lot is the most favored nation, and that's a big nationwide kind of initiative to look at other countries and see what they're doing and see how we can fix things within our own. So some suggest the U.S. should automatically allow OTC sales of drugs already available without a prescription in countries like the U.K. and Australia, where a pharmacist, like you semi-mentioned, where a pharmacist-only drug category has risen. What are your thoughts on this drug category for pharmaceuticals potentially reaching the U.S. healthcare system? Just dive deeper into that if you can.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal conversation. We got to avoid in healthcare, particularly pharmacy, making it circular. We want action-oriented conversations. Folks are going to APHA or ASHP or wherever, action oriented down there, making a plan to say, what are the benefits? What are the potential shortcomings of having an additional classification of medications? And could access again, if a pharmacy is not open, then how do you get that as well? We're talking 2 a.m. or whatever. There's certainly 24-hour stores, but not everywhere and not all of them. Potential shortcomings. But in the big picture, it makes it where then you get some counseling, you get some advice along the way, or at least the opportunity thereof, and including that access, perhaps like that, what you brought up earlier with payment structures, as far as insurance coverage and all that, maybe there could be something involved with that as well too. That's all kinds of brainstorming thoughts right there on all sides there. But the general idea is that but add this behind the counter status or pharmacist only, or maybe somebody else could come up with a cooler term, but I'm not concentrating on that. It's just the concept that it adds another layer of access where, let's be real, when's the last time any of us, anybody listening, went through our healthcare system and just was delighted? I'm talking like Disney delighted, okay? It does happen, by the way. And quite frankly, I really hope it's a whole bunch of my patients. But anyways, it's just different, okay? And that's, but the access needs to be there as well, too. There's a lot of hoops. There's a lot of time. My love language is time. I don't like to waste it along the way. And I know I'm not alone out there. A lot of other people like gifts or this or that or words and affirmations and all that stuff. But no matter what, our time is very valuable. And we have to look at ways to enable that. I actually had, this is going to be a little bit off the wall, but a couple months ago. So I'm aging, let's say, balding guy from West Virginia. Okay. So the algorithms all of a sudden a couple months ago, this is where you go to the edge of your seat, folks, started sending some medications my way in the algorithms of social media as far as ads. Buck a pill, it'll be on your doorstep tomorrow, if not the day after. Okay. That's access. All right. Is there safety concerns? Oh my gosh, yes. So I let my wife know, hey, I'm going to click the button to learn more. And then, of course, that could get a little bit dicey along the way. You've got the hair stuff, the ED things, you name it, the little blue pills and all that stuff. And I clicked it and I got 15 more. All of a sudden, that was my entire feed. And I screenshot it and I put it on LinkedIn and was like, think about this. This is actually something we can learn from. Yes, in the safety side of things. But why is it that these recreational things I can get cheap and quick compared to being held hostage for a refill for a Cecil allergy nose spray? I've lived that. Perhaps I'm going a little extreme in saying hostage, but you know what? It's, come on, folks. It brings up a whole another thing of, again, that access overall. And that's that statement from Mr. Macri. It's hopefully there's intentions there of provoking these thoughts. Okay. There's a sensationalization to it as well. Everybody loves a little bit of sunshine and limelight and all that stuff, right? We all get our, 15 seconds or whatever, and some get 15 years. That's inherent. That's what's happening there, of course. It provokes these conversations like we're having here today, though, to get that thought going as well. That's the glass half full approach, perhaps.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I love that you, with the social media aspect, and that's definitely a whole other podcast in some respects with the digital health, but it does contextualize and show like why these companies can, these things can happen. There's access, kind of bridges can be made, but there's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of things going on from every different level. So yeah, no, I really appreciate it. I just have two more questions. Want to talk about more about OTC switches and like kind of the corporate side of things, and then I'll let you put a bow on this conversation. But sources suggest manufacturers often game the system to keep drugs prescription only and to maintain higher profits. How can the pharmacy profession ensure that OTC switches are driven by clinical evidence rather than corporate incentives? Or how do you think?
Oh, that's another, you're on a roll today. That's just like, how would you fix everything on a random morning or afternoon? Good going. And I don't want to be a hypocrite because we're all given 24 hours in a day. What we do with our time is our choice and most of the time. But we got to be active within our profession, not just being a member of organizations, but active, actually being there. It's, does everybody have to do every conference every year? No. Do some people? Yes. But because that's where voices heard and propelled and the connections are made not just in a lobbying sense or any political action things, but beyond that, though, to get the ball rolling and make sure that those relationships are there to keep companies, to keep legislators all together along the way. I mean, essentially what you're inherent in what you're asking there is a who's driving the bus? How do we balance business and the finance meets clinical, right? Clinical, the corner of clinical and cash. These companies are corporations. They have stockholders. That's technically who's in charge, right? Maybe not the guy or gal with one share, but there's boards, there's this, there's that. There's a lot that goes into that overall. That being said, on the other side of the coin, trying to be fair, of course, is there's also good intentions out there as well, too. The better that something works and there's access and this and that, safety, efficacy, the more that stockholders would be happy as well, too. So there's a balance there, but it's really just keeping people informed, people in influential positions, whether it's in corporations, legislators, you name it. And it really starts in just making sure that what's the Hamilton thing and making sure you're in the room where it happens. Most of us aren't going to be on a board, CEOs, C-suites, all that kind of stuff. But we could get ourselves in the rooms where those folks get the right information. And that's it. It's all about getting that right information out there, preventing the misinformation and the spread of everything else.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that was perfectly said. To me, it definitely seems right now there's definitely some movement, some actions, events that are moving toward incentivizing patient care over those profits. But like you said, they're stockholders. There's a lot of things to consider with the changing healthcare landscape. So yeah, I really appreciate you joining me today. Just wanted to, like I said, put a bow on this conversation. And I think this is a rephrasing of the first question, but
okay.
Basically, with the inevitable end of the current FDA leadership's tenure, someone new is going to be in there eventually, as well as the presidential administration's. Do you think that there will be a significant overhaul of prescription and OTC drug categorization by 2028, say? Or do you think comments like these can simply come and go without major change?
Sensationalization. And strategic as well, too. It works. Literally, here we are talking about it. And we're obviously not alone. Other people have already been talking about it along the way. To think that we're going to overhaul an entire system that's taken a century to create within, I think just the parameter was about 2 years, if not three. That's in schools of pharmacy in the first year, P1 year. We go over a lot of soft skills. We go over a lot of stuff that's not even medications yet. One of those things is SMART goals. You know, measurable, attainable, all that kind of, and timely is that illustrious T at the end there for the acronym. That would not be a SMART goal. And that's that question. I appreciate how you work with things to try and avoid the politics, of course, but it's inevitable within it all. But it's objectively speaking, if you dissect it into, is this a SMART goal? That's just not a SMART goal. The subjective side would be like, if we get rid of the little periods and just say the word SMART, where that's an opinion. I like to avoid that on a hot mic because we're all entitled to our opinions. It's not like we have to influence others. But as far as that being a SMART, the acronym goal and timely and achievable based on the past of our country, that just doesn't seem in line. But it does plant a seed to keep these conversations going. It doesn't start them. We've already had them. But it keeps them going for the potential changes and analysis of access for patients. We've got to make it easier to get healthcare for each patient along the way. And that's really what it all comes down to in the big picture.
Awesome. Perfect way to cap this off, obviously, like with the kind of like sensational aspect. I very much agree. It's for better or for worse, like the incentives of making comments like these, it's starting these conversations, these necessary conversations. Yeah, I think that was very well put. And I really appreciate you coming on to add some nuance and contextualize these comments for the ambiguity that like we talked about. So I really appreciate it, Mark.
Absolutely. You're very welcome. And hey, just about any time. So
thanks so much. You have a good day.
You too, bro.